Hello and welcome to the Red Phone Zone, where we don't know what we're talking about. Welcome to issue number 37. Say it, Ethan.
This is issue number 37.
37! Okay.
In a row.
37. My girlfriend sucked 37 dicks in a row. But yeah, issue number 37 is going to be our year in spectacular. We're going to have, as always, several rotating topics, but tonight we're going to change things up a little bit by... we're going to be opening things up with a We Make It, where what would happen if some dumbass studio out there decided to throw money at us and say, Aaron, Ethan, Shay, why don't you guys make us a movie about 2010? So that'll be an interesting thing to do, I suppose. And then after that, we're going to do my favorite segment, a top six. And this is going to be the segment that we have literally had the most amount of time of preparation. I told both of these clowns that back in April, I believe, to be prepared for this at the end of the year. So if they're not prepared, it's their problem, not mine. And then after that, we're going to be wrapping all this up with a Red Phone Zone retrospective. We're going to be talking about what has happened with the Red Phone Zone in the year of 2010. But tonight is a very special episode because we do have a special guest host. Say hello, Tracy.
How's it going, guys?
Who the hell are you?
I am Ethan's friend. I sort of stalked The Gamer's Haven, his other podcast, and... met Ethan and the rest of the group at CanCon this past summer. I earned the Road Warrior Award. I drove 12 hours to get there.
Cool.
Ethan's staying at my place, and I said the price of doing so was that he let me on the broadcast. So
awesome.
So have you done Red Phone Zone and Gamer's Haven, or you just have to slum it with the Red Phone Zone?
So far, just the slumming. However, I'm thinking of working my tendrils into the Gamer's Haven podcast.
Guest hosted.
Oh, that's
once.
Right. I guest hosted once after Gen Con. So
that's interesting.
And I'm afraid I found out about the top six for tonight about 3 days ago. So I'm not quite as prepared.
Well, but... Shay found out about it about 3 hours ago. So
I've been thinking about it.
So. Yeah, so this should be interesting. And we, as always, it looks like we're going to have the peanut gallery of Beth back there.
Peanuts!
Hi. And then when we do the top six, Rachel has decided that she wants to take part in that one as well.
Put your cents in there.
She's my favorite.
She's your favorite Red Phone Zone member? Me too. Me
that's
too.
That's a snazzy poster you got back there.
Yeah, my Empire poster? That's the shit, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
I would show you yours, but I'd have to unroll it and all that good stuff. So, but I could show you the two, but I don't imagine that'd be very good television.
Probably not, no.
Probably not. So, yeah, but before we start up any of these topics, we have a segment that we like to call Geekly Happenings. It's when we talk about news that's relevant to us geeks. And I want to start this one up with one that's very close and dear to one of the members of the Red Phone Zone. That would be the impregnation and the engagement of one actress, Miss Natalie Portman.
Awesome.
Yep. So she is now knocked up.
Shay, it wasn't you. You're not the father, Shay.
I think I would have remembered that.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Most likely.
I would not bet money on that. But yes, I don't recall who it was. I looked at the name, and I'm like, who the hell is that? And I did a little Google search on who the hell it was, and didn't tell me nothing. So I didn't commit it to memory. So fuck it. But yeah,
some guy, probably not famous.
It's a guy, and apparently he. Is fertile, so we'll give them that. But yeah, I mean, you know, good for her. You know, I guess marriage works for some people, and hopefully it does work for Miss Portman. So that's pretty cool. Who else
awesome.
Wants to throw in some news here?
Well, I've got some old news from about 2 weeks ago when
okay.
we last left off. Have you guys heard about the hate group that is boycotting Thor?
No, but that's funny.
Boycotting Thor. What?
Okay.
What, for what?
I heard about this.
A Missouri-based hate group
naturally
is a boycott of Thor because of the casting of Idris Elba as Heimdall.
That's retarded.
What?
Uh-huh.
As we all know from back from issue number 5, Shay actually does have racial issues with that.
I think it was slightly inappropriate. I think he is a Nordic person. There weren't like a bunch of black guys running around in Nordic land, but it was just a quibble, really, more than anything else.
I know, I was just giving you shit. Yeah, you just brought it up, and you know, I don't imagine Shay's going to be wearing his hood out in front of the God Hates Fags church.
For goodness sakes.
You know, when Thor opens. I mean, will you? I don't think so.
No, I couldn't schedule it in.
Okay, well, hey, that's...
That's not huge news, but I thought it was amusing.
Yeesh.
It's just retarded. It doesn't surprise me, and I think that's fucked up. I'm like, yeah, that sounds about right.
For all the reasons to boycott a movie, that's certainly not one that I would have thought at all valid.
Well, so, but yeah, naturally they're based in the Midwest, so
like my first
between that and killing Evolution, yeah,
like some group that maybe like was anti paganism or something like this might have, you know, same type of people who are boycotting Harry Potter and
at
such because of magic and such.
Yeah, it is Missouri, not Kansas, so we can have like that 50 miles of comfort buffer or what have you.
Safely out of reach of, you know, some sort of throwing things at them, I guess.
So, yeah. Shay, you said something about having a little bit of news.
Oh, I've been trying to look up... I'm not very good at finding industry news, but I do look up science news on a regular basis. There was an interesting study that was done recently. Apparently, there was a long-standing story told about where the apricots in Hungary came from.
Okay.
I was unaware of this story, but apparently it's a big thing with the horticulturists about the apricots in Hungary being brought in from Turkey. And recently there was a very in-depth genetic analysis of the apricots in Hungary and Turkey to determine whether or not they were in fact the same apricots. And in fact, the story is true. They are the same apricots.
What?
I find it extraordinarily interesting.
They're the exact same apricots.
They are identical down to 32.
So they're related.
They're identical down to 32 different S genotypes, and that's really unlikely that they've obviously evolved a little bit in the last couple hundred years, but they were from the same stock as far as they can tell genetically.
So for all these years, Hungarian apricots have really just been Turkish apricots masquerading?
Yes, they were.
The world is shattered. I can only eat Turkish apricots now.
That's right. They were the original, the true apricot.
I'm moving to Missouri and protesting this shit.
Apparently, they were. The way the story goes, they were brought in. They were brought in by when the Ottoman Empire occupied Hungary. They left their apricots for the Hungarians to cultivate.
So it was one long invasion plan. First apricots.
Then footrests.
Then footrests.
And then flesh-eating robots.
And then flesh-eating robots. That's right. And in the robot news, I did have another random science story, actually, before I got to my robot news.
Do you want to talk about something interesting first?
Okay. Sure.
Okay. How about the December 15th passing of famed Academy Award-winning director Blake Edwards? Has everyone heard about that?
What has he done? What did he do?
He's known for stuff like the Pink Panther movies, The Party, Son of the Pink Panther, shit like that.
Yeah.
He's just one of those directors. He's one of like the last few, you know, old school directors that was still surviving, and he passed away some, I guess, 13 days ago.
Ouch.
So, yeah, shit happens. I do remember, when would you say that was, Ethan, that he won his honorary Oscar? Less than 5 years ago, right?
Ooh.
Lifetime Achievement Award.
2 or 3 years now, I think.
Yeah, it was less than 5 years ago, but it was a pretty cool little send off. He came out in a wheelchair, and the wheelchair crashed through the wall, and you know, just like in the perfect stylings of Blake Edwards. Yeah, that was cool. He's married. He was married to Julie Andrews.
Wow.
He got her to bear her bazoombas in several movies, which was a huge thing when it happened.
Good job, sir.
Good job, sir. We like the bazoombas. We enjoy the bazoombas indeed. It's sad to see that kind of shit happen, but you know, same with like Kirsch. You know, he was, you know, 80 some odd years old, and it's gonna happen. It's just sad to see go. So that sucks.
Wow.
You will be missed, Mr. Edwards.
That's right.
Ethan, do you got any more?
Just two more little pieces, interesting ones. Young Justice, the new DC animated series, is debuting on Cartoon Network, or premiering on Cartoon Network on January 7th. It 7 p.m., I'm assuming that's Central Time, or Eastern Time, excuse me.
Right.
It
already has premiered. There already has been a pilot episode.
It starts airing on January 7th regularly.
Correct, the ongoing series.
Yeah, and the other thing I spotted was, speaking of the wonderful poster you have behind you there, the U.S. Library of Congress has now stored the Empire Strikes Back.
Right.
It's going to be preserved in the National Film Archives.
I noticed that. They every year, I think they do 25 or 50 different films that they stick in there. I did notice that they put that in there. What else did I see that was in there? THX-1138 was in there, and Jesus Christ, the Pink Panther was in there as well. Yep. And yeah, a lot of people are like, you know, oh, you're just doing it because the directors died, but you know, fuck all that. Those are good movies; they deserve to be preserved, I think.
Wait, George Lucas died. This is news to me, and I should applaud.
Okay, first off, fuck off. Second off, we're talking about Irvin Kershner, the director of The Empire Strikes Back.
The director, not the producer.
Yeah, not the producer.
I only have a problem with Lucas because of the more recent movies. Everything else was great.
Shush. Was he not informed of the no Star Trek talking rule?
Jesus Christ. Star Wars talking, maybe?
Star Trek.
Star Trek, Star Wars. Same thing, right? Uh-huh. Wow.
Aaron, do you want to break a bottle over his head now?
They got laser guns in them, right?
Do it.
Whatever.
Do it.
But yeah, what's your stupid robot news?
The robot news is in closely following the October's the world's first all robotic remote surgery. There are a group
that's a new thing.
Montreal General Hospital in October was the first one to perform a completely automated robot surgery.
Was it even monitored by humans?
It was monitored, but it was all do this procedure. It was all button.
I guess I didn't know that was new. Huh.
Yeah, and so now there's a whole big that has spurred a bunch of research, and there's a couple different groups that are now coming out developing these. Since it was so successful, they're now.
Do you know what kind of surgery it was?
I had it up. I had it just right in front of me.
Was it something simple like an appendectomy or?
Yeah, it was. It wasn't a. It didn't.
Brain removal.
I'd have to find. Yeah, it wasn't a. It was not a
head
brain
transplant
or anything like that. It was probably an appendectomy.
Sure. Well, you mean they got to start simple. That's good. I mean, there's always
cancer. They removed a piece of cancer.
No, that's cool. I mean, yeah, I could see why people would be afraid of that because oh god, there's no human interaction. So you know what happens if it fucks up and
well, they're there. I mean,
well, you know. Fuck ups happen with human interaction.
That's
too.
True. I mean, so. The robots are pretty precise about what they do. So as long as nothing goes, as long as like some sort of power surge doesn't go wrong, or something's wrong with the patient that they weren't aware of, the robot will be able to do it quicker and more efficiently.
Excellent. Anybody else have any news?
I just got some general news about the RPG industry.
Oh shit!
I'll keep it brief. I promise. Generally speaking, it's been a really good year for RPGs. D&D 4th edition has been going great guns. In addition to that, you've got other big games like Pathfinder have been really, really successful. A recent poll that's in progress on enworld.org that someone started D&D 4th edition is being played by about 46% of people, and Pathfinder is a close like 38%. So it's good to see healthy competition in the industry, and the independent publishers have been doing fantastically. Dresden Files got picked up for an RPG, the Jim Butcher book series. So just a lot of really good games coming out, and I'm looking forward to 2011 to see what else is going to happen in that venue. So,
isn't it indierpg.net that has a group bunch of independent RPG producers that sort of work together using sharing their publication and distribution ability? Indie Press Revolution, right? Thanks, Ethan.
Yeah. And there are a bunch of independent conglomerates like that, but in general, it's just been a really, really good year. So I'll cap my RPG news with that. I won't bore you too much, Eric.
That's all right. Now, to us that are RPG ignorant, is Pathfinder some sort of offshoot of Dungeons & Dragons, or is it its own separate entity?
Sort of. It's when Wizards of the Coast decided to make 4th edition, it basically made 3rd edition open source and allowed whomever wanted to do whatever they wanted with it as long as they referenced the original license.
Yeah,
that's cool. So, then that's real
open
cool.
game license. It
was really cool. That gave rise 2A. To games like Mutants and Masterminds yeah. for your awesome superhero games. And Fantasy Craft for Alternative it's, Fantasy One. But
it's been a very interesting couple of years in the RPG industry, is because there are now two active D&D versions of D&D that are out and being supported.
Right.
And so it's D&D is competing with itself.
Yeah, because Pathfinder...
What? There's 4.0 and 3.5, or is there just something
Pathfinder
else?
Pathfinder is what happened to 3.5.
Well, Pathfinder is another iteration of 3.5. It's basically 3.6.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. I thought it was 3.79.
Jesus Christ.
It has a lot for people that really enjoyed 3rd edition but wanted to see substantial right. changes, whereas 4th edition is a big departure from what had been mm-hmm. going on. Both are good, viable systems, mm-hmm. and both have really strong... user bases, which is yeah. just cool to see.
It's really pick your flavor of D&D type of thing. Yeah. Basically happened in the last year or two. So.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. That's good. I mean, I don't play RPGs, but I don't begrudge anybody that does. And I think that kind of open source thing, especially in the struggling industry, is exactly what it needs to kind of get moving. But, you know, because you know, it just might take somebody, you know, writing a role-playing game of, I don't know, fucking Twilight or something that's just really, really popular that kind of gets role-playing games into like the mainstream mind frame. And I don't think that anybody would begrudge that, especially the guy with the gun to his head over there, if it makes more people take a second look at Dungeons & Dragons, Pathfinder, Mage, just shit like that. I mean, and yeah. that might actually be the first step in that direction. So, I think that's good. I think that's really good.
There actually is a bunch of movement in that venue because Margaret Weiss Publishing, right. the lady who co-wrote Dragonlance way back in the day.
I don't play it, but I did used to play it like 15 years ago, so I am familiar with some of these names and terms you're throwing out.
First setting I ever played in, actually.
The company ran the license for Firefly,
uh-huh.
for Smallville, for Leverage, for Supernatural.
And Battlestar Galactica.
And Battlestar Galactica. So all these popular TV properties have RPGs that are coming out for them.
Yeah.
And they're structured really, really well from what I understand.
Very smart.
So there's a lot of really cool popular support going on, and lots of IPs are signing on to get RPGs produced. So
especially with the shared system like the open game license.
That's a really good thing for the gaming industry. I could really see that being a huge benefit.
Yeah. I mean, there's a huge cross section of geeks who, you know, like all of us here, like both games, movies, popular culture.
Sure.
You know, So yeah, that's my two cents for the news segment.
Well, that's very good. I don't have anything else. At least I don't have anything else I want to like cap off with. I got some stupid little bullshit news, but it just seems weird to follow up some, you know, good news stories like, you know, that or Blake Edwards or something like that with like the fact that there has been rumors debunked that the Kroll and Skree are going to be in the Avengers movie. And that was actually out for a few days, and that scared the shit out of me. I just don't want to see that.
You don't want to see the aliens show
Fuck
up yet?
No. Not
it's
yet.
Too big.
It's too big, especially for a first movie.
It'd be its own movie, wouldn't it?
It would have to be its own movie, and there'd also already have to be seeds planted, like in the Captain America movie, the Hulk movie, the Iron Man
string
movie,
together,
all that stuff.
Fantastic Four.
It's just way too big to throw out there for the open for the first movie.
So everybody's sort of connected, so that you can bring like Wolverine, Thing, a couple of guys from the Avengers, Iron Man, Hulk, and Thor, all. You know,
correct.
So that you can pull from all of the concept movies out to have sort of the dream team of real heavy hitters go up against an army of like Imperiex or something.
Right, and you don't do that with one movie with 45 minutes of exposition and then expect us to give a shit. At least to really care that much. But yeah, I guess that's going to wrap up Geekly Happenings. Dude, we're done with that like 20 shows ago.
I know, I like it, though.
Jesus. But yeah, that's going to wrap us up for Geekly Happenings. Stay tuned, we're going to be right back with We Make It, 2010 the movie.
Do you feel like you're alone? Am I a 12-room house to you? Sometimes nothing's really had in common. Sometimes nothing will do. But you can't have one or the other. Maybe that's true. You can't have one of me or the other. And if only one will do, maybe I can.
We are back with We Make It. This time, we are going to be taking a stab at making 2010 the movie. What do we mean by that? Well, it's kind of what it sounds like. If somebody said, we would like to see 2010 represented in celluloid, and it's up to the four of us, six of us, seven of us, and the dogs can pipe in if they would like as well. But what would need to be...
$2 for no.
There you go. What would need to be included in a movie about 2010? I don't really know how to approach this other than, you know, the research I did on it was I just kind of did a Google search of the top news stories of 2010, which I guess I can read off real quick.
Sounds like a good start.
So, according to, you know, Google, the top 10 news stories of 2010 were the BP oil spill, the healthcare overhaul, the U.S. election, the U.S. economy, the Tea Party movement, the Chilean miners, the WikiLeaks, and Afghanistan. So that is the top news stories about what people feel is relevant about 2010. Now, is there something? Go ahead.
I think for me, it's down to two things that you could make good movies off of: is the Chilean miners or the BP oil spill.
And exactly, and I was kind of thinking along those lines. I would also throw the Tea Party movement into there, because the way that I'm kind of looking at this movie is I'm just kind of thinking of, you know, get story X and insert it into 2010, and, you know, kind of the story that we can have, we could have, you know, what's looking like the decline of humanity, what with like the BP oil spill and nobody fucking caring about it and nothing being done about it until after the fact. And then we can look at shit like the Tea Party movement, which anybody in their...
Omens of Doom, basically.
Well, yeah, I mean, anybody in their right mind doesn't really think that way, I hope. If I'm alienating people, I don't care.
Yeah.
Because it's just that extreme. And then, yeah, you can throw in little touches on the elections, which, you know, is an ugly offshoot of the Tea Party movement. You can throw in shit with the economy. You can even the WikiLeaks. You can use all these news stories over the course of 2010 to really paint this bleak and ugly picture of the world that we live in right now, and then maybe have it told in that time frame of the 39 days that the miners were in the mine. And then, you know, and just kind of use that as like a rallying point for people. Like, well, like maybe there really is some, you know, decency left in humanity. Maybe something like that.
They all got iPods.
And then they all got iPods. With Pearl Jam. No, Green Day. Yeah, Green. No. No, it was. No, 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 no. Foo Fighters. They were full of Foo Fighters. That's what it was.
They gave them iPods because they survived the mine?
No, they gave them iPods when they're in the mines because they were asking them what they would like, and one of the things they requested was iPods full of Foo Fighters. And then, you know, Dave Grohl, the lead singer of the Foo Fighters, heard about this, and he invited them to a concert and bought them a beer and shit like that.
Nice.
So, hey.
Well, the thing that came to my mind was if we did a movie about 2010, or we're doing a movie about 2010, right? So what I want to do is I want to reference the movie 2010,
the 2010, the sequel to 2001.
Yeah, and like maybe draw sort of some sort of parallel or some sort of connection between what we were looking into the future and what has happened now. So maybe the story about. I actually had a textbook kind of storyline that sprang to mind of some guy who's maybe dating someone and has a normal day job and is basically looking at the world and all its destruction, and you bring that in counterpointed by this sort of like a scene from 2010, the Space Odyssey, where there's people walking in spaceships and all this kind of thing and going to Mars, and then down to the real world of this guy watching television, and it's like miners trapped in Chilean mine, and then he sort of tries to go about his normal life, and you kind of keep flashing things about how bad reality is, and then maybe he decides to go on a camping trip and go out into nature, and then they get back and the miners are saved.
Okay.
It'd be a real sort of Hallmark-y kind of movie at that point.
Fuck, I guess so.
I mean, a realistic 2010 movie would not have any aliens or you know, Martians or anything showing up, but...
Naturally, which is why I didn't bring it up.
Right, so, but I mean, I was trying to think of what kind of narrative you could tell in that context where we're counterpointing, my idea being counterpointing the hopeful projections of the past versus the sort of darkness of the real scenario, and then add in that little... You know, something very natural and safe and fun. They decide that some guy decides to go on a camping trip with his girlfriend and a bunch of buddies to try and then maybe tries to, and they decide to be more in love with each other or something at the end of the movie. You know, maybe he proposes to her or something. I don't know.
Okay. Ethan?
I'm still sticking with the BP or the Chilean miners myself. I think in this case, you've got either a taut corporate thriller, or you've got the survival story, you know, of the human story of, oh, overcoming all obstacles and, you know, hey, we survived this horrible ordeal. I would go with the corporate thriller myself and totally make it a genre story.
Yeah, something along the lines of, like, The Insider, something like that.
The Social Network.
See, I initially thought that, but, you know, fuck that. I wouldn't want to see that movie, just, like, unless under, like...
Your idea is bad, Ethan. Movie gone.
Well, no, I'm not saying that. Because it can't be a bad idea, because I thought of it, too. And it just, like... I moved,
wait a minute.
I moved past it, because, you know... Unless under really specific circumstances, I would just find that to be a boring movie. I mean, it would have to be a movie directed by Michael Mann with, you know... brilliant performances by like Al Pacino and Russell Crowe and shit like that.
And you could also take a different approach to it and have it be about the downfall of the head of BP.
Yeah, well, I guess that could be done, except for the fact that we are 8 months past that happening, and has he completely fallen yet?
Yeah, he's no longer the CEO.
Yeah, he got fired.
Yeah, he did get fired, but I don't know. It just seems like you could take that story so much further past, you know, the loss of his job. I don't know.
I think he just doesn't work there anymore and lives in his mansion.
Tracy, pull us out of the mud. Fix it.
My suggestion is not going to help pull us out of the mud at all. In
all
fact,
right.
My dick doesn't work because I was thinking about it, and really, if we were given license to create a movie about 2010, and we pitched this to the people that said yes, we're gonna bankroll this, we would probably get shot down completely. And all they would want is a sequel/prequel to 2012 with John Cusack.
Interesting. So it'd be like,
I guess we could outrun
2 years, 2 years
and
ahead
so
of.
It would end up being completely unrealistic and about how whatever forces.
We'd have to blow up the White House.
Whatever forces tore up the world in 2011 were planted there by alien technology, which influenced the Mayans or what have you. Because it would be the kind of ridiculous, stupid, special effects filled blockbuster.
Roland Emmerich would direct.
That sells.
Chupacabra, Quetzalcoatl. Gotcha.
It's going to be.
I'm not paying Roland Emmerich a fucking nickel.
It's a Jerry Bruckheimer film. I mean, that's what would actually get produced, unfortunately, I think.
You're entirely wrong there, because the production team is, you know, us. And fuck if I'm going to let Jerry Bruckheimer anywhere near this.
It's mine. It's mine.
Our other option is to do a film about the films of 2010 and how much they sucked ass.
That would be cool. It'd be I thought about that as like kind of like an incomplete amoeba of a story in my head, where I was kind of thinking about a film school student who was, you know, really wanting to, you know, go out and make the next Citizen Kane and shit, and he's going out to the movies and seeing these bullshit fucking movies that are coming out in this year. I mean, I did kind of have that idea, but I kind of shot it down because it just sounded kind of dumb.
And I like the movies that came out this year.
You know, if you want to do a documentary, you can see how the writer's strike influenced the movies this year.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure that's probably where we're getting all this, the crap that came out this year.
And I think so.
I like most of the stuff that came out this year. I don't know, maybe I'm just sort of a pander.
Well, your vote doesn't count, Shay. Now.
moving on.
Okay. I don't want to make a movie about 2010. I'd like to throw that there. I'd like to ask for money to do other things, but you know, this is just something that we just kind of approach because I don't know. Had to have been Shay's idea.
You know what would have been would actually make a grand and epic movie and is all about the most important thing that happened in the year 2010.
Don't say the fucking Red Phone Zone movie.
Fine, never mind. I thought it was a great idea.
I knew he was going to say that. We've already talked about making a Red Phone Zone movie.
We did have?
Jesus Christ. You don't listen to this show, do you?
No.
We did issue 10. It was on issue 10 when we did our first Ruthaus show, and we also discussed a casting couch of the members of the Red Phone Zone as well as the characterization of Aaron.
Sorry, but we only ended up casting you.
Well, we cast all of us.
You cast me? Who'd you cast as me?
Jason Mewes.
Oh, right.
And I think we went with Seth Rogen for Ethan.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... But yeah, we already discussed that, and I don't want to kill any more time on it. But what we are going to do is we're going to discuss the good movies of 2010. We're going to be just taking a stab at doing our top six favorite films of 2010. And we are back with the top six segment this time around. We are going to be doing our top six favorite films of 2010. It is something that we talked about briefly earlier in the show, that 2010 was not a great year for film by any stretch of the imagination. So a lot of the big films kind of fell flat. They didn't do what they were hoping. I actually did just read an article today stating that 2010 was the second largest year for movies of all time, yet considered a disappointment considering the projections and what they were hoping to make. So all that being said, it has been a disappointing year for film, but I have to disagree that they were all bad. There were several films that I did think were good, and I do think that we need to just, you know, right now throw the caveat in there that obviously this is going to be a top six list of the films that we have seen. We obviously can't say that, you know, whatever is that great of a film if we haven't seen it. So, all that being said, we did decide to bring in Rachel for this one because she saw every single film that I saw this year and probably a couple more. So, you know, she has just as much to add to this segment as I do or Ethan or Shay.
Let's hope, at least.
At least let's hope so.
I fully believe so.
I believe so, yeah. So, starting everything off, Ethan will go first and we'll have, let's have...
start with me and go this way.
Yeah, we'll have Ethan go first, and then you, then we'll hit Tracy, then Shay, then myself, and then we'll just keep going. Ethan, number six.
Out of the, as I said, I sat down and figured out I saw about 25 movies that came out in 2010 that I actually saw. I don't know if we have an actual count as to how many movies came out this year or
anything
like that.
There is a count. I didn't look. It doesn't matter. I don't think that it's important.
Ranking them, a lot of these are movies we've talked about here on the show, but my number six would have to be Red, with Bruce Willis and Morgan Freeman, John Malkovich. It was, I just found it to be an incredibly fun, entertaining movie. It's definitely an Ethan movie. And
I agree. That's an Ethan movie. Nowhere near my top 10. I did think it was a lot of fun.
It was near mine. Sure.
It was, for me, it was just darn entertaining, great, great time sink, good Saturday night popcorn movie, lots of inappropriate giggling, and I really, comparing to the other movies I did see this year, I rank it much higher on my list. Obviously, it's in my top six, so
sure.
I rank it a lot higher than a lot of the other movies I did see. So.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't consider this a movie I saw. I wouldn't consider Red a movie that I saw this year that I disliked. I just think there are movies that I enjoyed more. So.
And I completely forgot about that one at all.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did you? Yeah, you saw that too, didn't you?
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, I did too.
I think Red is a solid honorable mention for me. But yeah, following it up, Rachel, what's your number six?
Well, I did not have since April to prepare for this. So, and one thing about me in movies is I can see them once and completely forget about it. Obviously, I just said I forgot about Red. So, you know, I'm going with the movies that I actually remember that I saw.
Naturally.
And there's a lot, actually a few surprises on my list, even to myself. But my number six, it came out last year in the theater, but it was released on DVD in, I think, November. And that is Christmas Carol with Jim Carrey. That is my number six.
I have not seen it.
That one could not hold my attention. I tried to watch it with
you. And I've already mentioned, I think, before that is my favorite Christmas story, period. So,
right. So you got a little bit of bias working there.
Yeah, but that is my number six.
Muppets version all the way.
Hey?
What's that?
Muppets version.
Yeah, Muppets Christmas. I do love me some Muppet Christmas Carol. I think we discussed that last week.
Yeah.
We did?
Yes.
Excellent.
Did I?
Not last week, the week before.
Well, week before, and you weren't even here. Okay, cool. Tracy, number six.
My top six is going to be real different from most of yours because I think I've seen maybe seven movies this year. So I've got some like mid-January 2010 releases in my number six. And it's
The Graveyard.
Yeah, brace yourselves. Legion.
Legion!
I like Legion.
I did like Legion.
It's my number six. I actually had been sitting in our Netflix Instant Queue for a while because it came out to the Instant Queue pretty quickly, and we finally watched it, and I, for what it was actually surprisingly well done. I was impressed with a lot of the visuals, and I think that it had some decently named actors in it.
Paul Bettany.
That time
Paul Bettany was real good.
Yeah.
I like me some Paul Bettany.
Yeah, Paul Bettany will get me. I mean, I don't think he's...
Get you a little hard?
Cotton buzz.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's climbing up that ladder for me. I like him a lot.
He's a great guy. And that movie, I can say about it, is it was a heck of a lot better than I thought it was going to be.
I mean, it's about angels killing shit on Earth. How good does that sound?
I expected it to be a steaming pile of crap, and I actually enjoyed it. So.
Yeah, there's no steam coming off that crap at all.
It's not a cinema masterpiece. But for me, it definitely sits well at number six, and I'd be interested to see if a sequel comes out because they left it hanging. So,
yeah, I could see that. I could see that sequel unfortunately going like direct to video and losing so much quality. Wouldn't
sort of like
funny.
The Prophecy sequels.
Yeah, actually, that's a good analogy. The Prophecies.
Well, I won't give it away. Anyway,
excellent.
That's me.
Shay, what's your number six?
My number six is Clash of the Titans.
Okay, I didn't like that movie even a little bit.
I fell asleep.
I was a huge fan of the old Clash of the Titans.
Me too.
Movie, and watching it again was a treat. And I really enjoyed it. I did not think it was terrible. There was a lot of little quibbles where I was like, oh, it would have been nicer if everyone was like, well, who are these weird stone tree walking magi people? And a couple of the... And a friend, me and a friend who is very versed in classical mythology, like I am, both sat there and were nitpicking through it going like, they screwed up the legend, they screwed up the legend, they screwed up the legend. Who is that girl? Who is this person? Where did that's not part of it. Hey, there's the mechanical owl. You know, and it was... But it was a fun experience, a fun movie. I thought it was well done. It flowed very well, and it seemed like it was less about the old story of Clash of the Titans than it was about a sort of
making money.
Well, it was skipping over that, going more towards what the thesis of the movie was about. It was sort of an anti-establishment or anti-authority play where the person sort of came to grips with, you know, Perseus came to grips with Zeus's rulership being a positive thing. After all, because they were misunderstanding what Zeus was trying to do, which I thought was sort of a statement on society.
And it was awful.
Okay, I'm going to say this. I'm going to give Shay a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. After watching that movie, I did not want to shoot myself in the head.
Okay.
I will say that movie is what stands out in my head as bad 3D. Awful fucking rendered 3D, and I think that might have destroyed the movie more than it should have for me. Other than that,
the new Clash of the Titans is an example of what is what is fundamentally wrong with what Hollywood considers to be a great movie nowadays.
Right. You know, action beats.
Guys with no shirts on.
Guys with no shirts on. Holy shit, this guy was in Avatar. That movie made $1 billion.
We're going to put him in this.
Now we're going to make fucking $1 billion again because we got the same guy and it's in 3D.
We're going to make the scorpion stinger come out of the screen.
All that being said, I don't think it's as bad as all that. I just found it mostly unforgettable. Mostly forgettable.
It wasn't the worst movie that came out this year.
Oh, shit, no. I have a feeling that like one of like the worst movies that came out this year is going to fall on a list or two. But, yeah. Honestly, I didn't think it was that bad, but I like the original, and that's all I need. So, yeah, moving on. My number six is one that, if there is such a thing as a cop-out in this field, I would be taking it. And the reason I would be calling this a quasi sort of kind of cop-out is because I chose the 2010 Brandon Vietti directed but direct-to-video Batman Under the Red Hood. It is a movie that came out in 2010. Just because it didn't hit theaters does not mean it did not come out in 2010. We did do a watch this on Batman Under the Red Hood. I really enjoyed it. I think it's up there with some of the best Batman animated films that have come out ever, and I really enjoyed it. So
it is pretty good.
I've heard a lot of buzz about it. I haven't had a chance to see it yet, but I'll give you the pass on that one.
I rather enjoyed it. I mean,
wasn't
just because
the theaters, but
We didn't say the top 2010 theatrical releases. We
That's
said
true.
And I was actually very careful to word it that way because I knew I wanted this on my list.
I see.
You know, because I build these lists, it's pretty easy to make them work the way I would like to see them. But yeah, that's my number six. I enjoyed it. I think that if you want to hear more about it, just go search through our old episodes and you can hear what I have to say about that.
Several times.
Ethan, number five.
I went with just theatrical releases, but I mean, that movie's a great one. I do love that one.
Yeah.
I went with my number five being Iron Man 2.
Hey.
Didn't make my list, actually.
Kicked off the summer as number one. You know, kicked off the summer as a great movie this summer. You know, and sort of set the stage for the disappointment that came. That was the summer movies.
Unfortunately,
but Iron Man
right.
2. I think the best way to describe it is how you described it, Aaron, was that it was Iron Man 2.
Mm-hmm.
It was,
and that's what it was.
Yeah.
It was truly just a sequel to the first Iron Man. There was nothing out of place. There was not. I mean, the budget was not, you know, so much more that it just seemed like a completely different movie, which is something that happens with a lot of these. And I agree.
Just felt like a natural. You watch the first one, and then there's a second one. They felt like they went together, and I thought that just worked really well. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Iron Man.
I left Iron Man 2 off my list because I actually felt safe that it was going to fall onto somebody else's list.
I wasn't sure if it was, but I left it off of mine because I thought it was kind of corny.
Yeah, because you're a shithead. You just didn't like it too much, and it didn't come together right.
And
holy shit, fucking Mickey Rourke's head wasn't blown off after the explosion.
It should have been. It was so.
It's a comic book. Rachel, number five.
My number five is Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
I like me some Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
It was fun and entertaining, and the music was cool, and it was stupid at the same time, and
incredibly stupid.
So much fun to watch. It was just you completely just got like taken away for a moment. It was just like, yeah, this is cool.
It was a very unique theatrical experience.
Musical experience.
You know,
yeah.
you walk out of that movie going like, what the fuck was that all about? I mean, I've said it before that it really reminded me of watching Moulin Rouge, and just that it was just so just in your face about it. I mean, it was quite an experience. Quite an experience indeed. Anybody want to comment on Scott Pilgrim?
Wait till later in my list.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I guess, number five.
My number five was Salt, the espionage action movie with Angelina Jolie.
Sure.
Again, not anything amazing, but it was a good, solid action movie that honestly had a few not completely predictable twists and turns. And Angelina Jolie did a good job in the role she was cast in. So it also had the guy who played the bounty hunter for the Alliance in Serenity. Can't remember his name.
Impronounceable
name guy. Anyway,
it's the black guy.
The assassin. Yeah.
the assassin.
I don't know who that is.
I haven't seen Salt yet.
I haven't seen Salt. I don't particularly want to.
I was interested in seeing it. I just didn't.
This is the point where my list is the weakest, so we can just shudder a little bit and move on.
Okay.
I heard it was good. And again, I've heard it was relatively good.
I don't want to see it, but I'm not going to go out of my way to see it. I mean, I have a penchant against Angelina Jolie, as Ethan can attest.
And I'm sort of with him on it, so...
What's wrong with Brangelina?
The stuff I wanted to see, so...
Yeah.
Cool.
I saw it by happenstance, and so it counts.
There you go.
Excellent. Shay, number five.
My number five is, and I thought about this one for a second, because this is sort of, there were lots of different things. I wanted to put Clash of Titans sort of at the last, because it was sort of, it was like, I know that it wasn't the greatest movie ever, but I really enjoyed the seeing Clash of the Titans again. For my number five, I decided after a couple of thoughts to put in Harry Potter 7. I really enjoyed it, I liked it, I thought it was well done, and... I also haven't read the book, so I really just I wanted to see what else happened to these characters after the last book that I've read, which was, and I got to watch more about Harry and Hermione and Ron and got to see the owl die and et cetera, et cetera. It was neat. It was sort of dreary, but it was well played.
Also, didn't make my list because I exact same reason Iron Man 2 did, and I knew it was going to hit somebody else's list. So, I mean, I really enjoyed it, but I think Harry Potter is in a class of its own when it comes to movies.
I can definitely see that.
So I just didn't want to, what is that?
That's a
You've got
text
a
from...
lot of background noise. Okay.
Oh, that's fine.
All right, so I guess that brings me to my number five, huh? My number five was originally, until I really started thinking about it, was originally Iron Man 2, because I really, really, really did enjoy Iron Man 2 quite a bit. But once I got thinking about it, I knew it was going to fall on these other lists. And, you know, while we want to make these lists as true as possible, I also want them to be informative to where we can actually talk about as many subjects as possible.
Instead of naming the same movie over and over
again. Yeah, it gets kind of boring. But at the same time, it's Iron Man 2, totally an honorable mention on my part. Same with Harry Potter. I threw in a movie that I just saw last week, and it was a lot of good. It was obviously the 2010 release of the Joel and Ethan Coen release of True Grit. I really, really, really enjoyed that. I actually got to catch a screening of it before everyone else was there, so I don't have to deal with a shitload of people. It's fucking Jeff Bridges being a badass. You got whatchamacallit, Josh Brolin being a dumbass. You have Matt Damon just being a stupid hick. And it's just a really good movie. It's definitely got that Coen Brothers feel. I will say that the dialogue was really weird. It was very, very proper in that, like, I would say, I'm going to go over to the store. And they would say, I am going to go over to the store. I mean, they hit every single syllable that you're supposed to hit. When in like a Western, you used to kind of like that drawl and that slang and that kind of thing. And I don't know, that just kind of struck me as odd. But Jeff Bridges was badass in it. And I really enjoyed it, and I cannot recommend it enough. And that's my number five.
I haven't had a chance to see that one yet, and I really want to.
Yeah, I'm keeping on that one.
Haven't seen it yet either.
Good movie.
I was sick.
Yeah, she didn't go either. So
Aaron is the only one whose word we have on this movie.
Yeah. Fuck me. Okay, moving on. Ethan, what's your number four?
My number four is one that, in retrospect, I moved up on the list in how much I liked it. And it's the obvious 2010 release, Kick-Ass.
Oh,
I forgot about that.
Yeah, that should be on my
list. Total honorable mention.
It came out back in April. And I thoroughly enjoyed that movie, and I watched it again just a couple weeks back, and thoroughly enjoyed it even more. So it's another one of those movies with lots of inappropriate giggling in it, but I think it had a bit more meat to it in that it had something to convey as far as a sort of a moral or a story type of thing that I think just really resonated well, and I really liked it. The whole comic, it was a new take on a comic book movie that really didn't want to pull any punches.
Yeah, surprisingly violent. Really violent.
Yeah.
So Kick-Ass.
No, I really enjoyed that one also.
If I had remembered it, it probably would have made my list.
Would have it made my list, but yeah, it's a very good movie. Very good movie.
It might have kicked something out, but it's definitely a mention, an honorable mention.
Cool. Rachel, number four.
My number four is Harry Potter 7, part 1. I think mostly it just got me excited for the last and final and the end. And I don't know. You know, I knew it was going to happen. I've read the book several times, but I still cried when the owl died, and I still cried when Dobby died.
Yeah.
So, you know. It was good.
And the fact that it got me so excited for the next one made me very comfortable taking it off of this list. Because I want to see the next one. Fuck this one. I mean, as much as I enjoy the stairs, I like getting to the landing a little bit more. Hmm. Yeah, but, you know, I did enjoy it. A very good movie. Very good movie.
Yep,
cool. All right. Tracy, number four.
My number four is The Expendables.
Good one.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of... I've got an action movie on the list that's one notch higher, but it was
an Bless you.
Unbelievably solid action movie with a cast that probably shouldn't have worked as well together as they did. I think that the individual storylines, such as they were well played out. The characters actually had a little bit of depth to them, which is not something you always get. The plot line was cliche, but it's an action movie. What do you want? It had a lot of good explosions. It had some great one-liners, and the combat sequences were spectacular.
It was a cliched action movie of action movies.
Yep.
It was the Ethan movie to end all Ethan movies, I think.
Yeah. The only thing I would have changed about it is I would have completely cut Arnold Schwarzenegger's cameo because I thought it was stupid and useless. Right. Beyond that, I mean, the movie was very good, enjoyable start to finish.
It was what they were at. You can tell like that there was something that they were aiming for, and that's what they got.
Right.
Exactly.
It's an interesting look at some of the movies that came out this year, is that we had four movies that were basically like that, with the team of people who came together to do something. I mean, there's the Losers, there's the A-Team, there's the Expendables, and there's Red.
Right.
So they're all the same basic premise, but those four came out this year.
Yeah. And apparently it was just something that was in the water last year.
Yeah.
Cool.
So.
All right. Shay, number four.
My number four is Predators.
Okay.
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really fun. There was only a couple of little things I thought could have been better, but all in all, I thought it was a really great thriller, more so than a horror movie. It was action thriller as opposed to like a horror fantasy kind of movie. The characters were really interesting. The inversion of the predators and the aliens and the people that are the predators in this are actually the human element. Is they're a group of killers. There's a sort of a grab bag of different types of killers from around the world, and they are the predators of from the name of the movie, even though the movie's a predators movie. There was a really interesting, very, very creepy bit where there's a survivor from maybe one of the previous land drops of hunting humans that had a hidden cave that these people found, and really amped the sort of like, can they even make it out? Can they even make it out? There was sort of an M. Night Shyamalan twist near the end as things were going along, and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was excellent, and I want to know what happened afterwards. I mean, I'm not sure if it's deserving of its own comic book or its own movie, but I was thinking comic book would be a great way of telling what happened to that character, like a 12-part miniseries of what happened to the two characters that are at the end of the movie.
I like Predators. It was
I haven't seen it, so I can't really comment.
Yeah. It's a great throwback to the original Predator.
Is it?
Thematically, musically, it hits a lot of the same beats. But it was really good. I enjoyed it. It didn't make my top six list, but I did enjoy that movie quite a lot.
It did have the same score. It had the same musical score as the original, with some modifications.
I'd like to think so. So I guess we're now on to my number four.
Yeah.
Yeah. My number four is a movie that only one out of all of us have ever even heard me say boo about would be Rachel. It's a movie that I enjoyed a lot, and I'm not going to say I kept it to myself, but it's just not one that I felt the need to really discuss a lot. It is the Tim Blake Nelson-directed film Leaves of Grass, starring Edward Norton, and also had Susan Sarandon, and it also had Tim Blake Nelson in it. It's kind of a somewhat complicated plot.
Isn't that based off a book?
I don't know. It isn't based off of a book because it was written by Tim Blake Nelson.
Okay.
Because he wrote a book first, which I don't believe he did.
Well,
the classic American author Walt Whitman wrote Leaves of Grass in the early 20th century.
Okay, so it's an homage name.
In some way, shape, or form, because that's a pretty iconic work.
Well, was it about two pot growers from Alabama?
Probably not.
No.
Well, that's what this movie was about. Yeah, I mean, it probably was just like a reference to the title. It's just one of those movies. It's one of those movies that you see so often where the star is actually playing twins. And that is something that goes wrong so often in so many movies that it just sucks. And it's just boring and it's stupid and it's cliched. And Edward Norton is just that good of an actor to where he believably pulled off two completely separate characters, two completely believable characters in a story that was, you know, very unique. I mean, it's certainly not your everyday, you know, stupid ass Hollywood movie that came out, and I thought it was a lot of fun, and I really, really enjoyed it a lot. So that's my number four. Rachel.
Excellent.
Number three, excuse me.
My number three, it's the only animated movie that has made it onto my list. It's actually one of the only animated movies I saw this year. It was obviously the best one I saw, and it was How to Train Your Dragon.
Ooh,
good movie.
Honorable mention.
I mean, it's a great kids movie. There's a lot of action to it. Entertaining, you know, got a great story. I enjoyed the heck out of it. So, obviously, I still haven't seen Toy Story 3, so there you go. But I really enjoyed How to Train Your Dragon. It was just the work they put into the actual dragon itself, and the whole, it's just a great, fun kids movie. You know, it's totally something you can take kids to and have a great time with, and I enjoyed the heck out of it, so.
Excellent.
Very good movie.
I liked it, too, quite a bit. Rachel?
My number three is Toy Story 3. Yeah, I don't know what to say about it. We've talked about it before. I think I was on here and talked about it, so.
Yeah, it was when we did our top six Pixar films.
Yeah, so great movie. Chloe got it, I don't know, when it came out or whatever.
We watched it
so many times, it's not even funny. So
yeah.
I'm a little sick of it at the moment, but that's a mommy thing. But
I've only watched it the once.
It's an awesome movie.
Well, or twice.
I cried.
I think I'm still borrowing.
Yeah, you are.
It was a really well-done movie.
Very well done.
Yeah, I just... You know, I just didn't really enjoy it as much as you guys did for some reason.
Sad.
I have a hard time getting into the toy movies for some reason, like the little secret character movies or something for some reason.
I always thought when I was a kid that toys came to life, so these movies were like, you know, great for me.
Yeah.
See, hi, I told you.
Yeah. Cool.
They do come to life and play when I'm not around.
Tracy, number one, number three.
My number three was Red.
Okay.
Hey.
My wife and I obviously don't see a ton of movies when they come out in the theaters. That was one of the few that we wanted to check out in a theatrical release. And again, I really enjoy seeing good characters in the movies that have a lot going on. Plus, you know, I am a huge fan. I'm horrible with actor names, but. The love interest for Bruce Willis in it, she's the lady from
Mary Louise Parker.
Yeah, Mary Louise Parker. She could read the phone book, and I would probably watch it. So
she's aged well.
Yeah, that definitely helped. Bruce Willis did a great job. It's got Morgan. If you know, pardon me for the quick inductee. It's got Morgan fucking Freeman in it.
He didn't win.
He was a nominee. Trying it out on the tongue, you know.
Personally, I think he deserves the appellation of the extra middle name.
I do too. Say.
Next round.
But anyway, it was a good cast. It was a fun story. It was a good adaptation of a graphic novel.
I think Malkovich stole the cake on that one, though. I thought he was the best character in it.
Definitely.
But you could tell everyone in that movie was having fun.
Yeah.
So rare these days, too.
To see a cast of actors who can really pick whatever movie they want to be in.
You know,
in.
It's like you have a movie with Morgan Freeman in it like that. You can tell he's having a good time, and he's doing this movie because he's like, fuck you, I want to do this. This looks like fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's with
Helen Mirren. I got my Oscar, yeah. What do you want from me?
He's like, Oscar, you know, bite me. I'm going to go freaking fire a 50 cal because it's going to be a fun movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it was enjoyable, came out of it saying that was fantastic, and I want to get it, you know, when it releases on the 25th of next month, so.
Yeah. And it's another one of those movies that came out this year that I've been noticing a trend as far as action movies is you have the action movies coming out where the heroes are supreme badasses again, you know?
Yeah.
It's another one of those movies.
Yep.
Cool. Shay, number three.
My number three is Resident Evil 4.
Didn't see it.
Loved it.
Wanted to.
Movie
came out on DVD yesterday.
Yep, movie was written for me. My brain. How many clones of Mia Jovovich can we have in one scene? And, you know, alien zombie, well, you know, parasite zombies. And it was great. It was awesome. I loved it.
Didn't like the first three. I can't imagine liking the fourth one, but I'm not going to say no yet.
I want to see it, but I haven't yet.
If you're not Ethan's expecting like,
I don't want to see it.
You will love it.
I really like the first three, and I think I saw the third one in the theater, so I really wanted to see it, but have not yet.
It's pretty gory. It's a little darker. It reminded me a little when I watched Harry Potter. Actually, it reminded me. It's like they used the same film grain. You know how Harry Potter 7 has that sort of dark, sort of gray cast. The Resident Evil 4 has that sort of same dreariness to it, because it's sort of like a post-apocalyptic progression. You know, the whole world has now been infected, and there's whole cities and swaths of the country that are fighting to survive against hordes of T-virus zombies.
Cool.
Excellent. So we're on to my number three.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be short and sweet because I don't have a whole lot more to say about this movie that I haven't already said when we did our confessions on it. My number three is Scott Pilgrim versus the World. I'm actually surprised it made it that high on my list because of my distaste for Michael Cera. But, you know, that's a kind of a testament to the storytelling and the direction of that film to where he did not drag it down, even though he did irritate the shit out of me all the way through it.
He seemed very un-Michael Cera. It seemed like he was really getting a character there.
He might have been trying.
Scott Pilgrim's an ass, and Michael Cera played an ass.
That's true.
I mean, even still, I mean,
the whole thing with knives.
Yeah, he was playing Michael Cera, and boys, he got a lot of practice at that. So, yeah, I enjoyed it. Great visuals, great music, a really unique movie-going experience. We've talked about it before. I imagine we'll be talking about it again, and I don't have anything else to say about it. So, Ethan, number two.
Number two. My number two and my number one sort of flip-flop back and forth, but I'm gonna stick with my number two is what I've got it, and it was Tron Legacy.
I still haven't seen that.
Oh, yeah, I haven't seen that yet. I'm sure it would be on my list, actually.
It's a movie that's fundamentally different from the first one, and I really sort of, when I was watching it, I just kept thinking Blade Runner.
Yeah. Well, that happened with the first one with me a lot.
This one more so, and I just really enjoyed that sort of deeper existential story and theme that they were going for in the movie, and it just resonated with me because I love the original so much, and this one wasn't a, hey, let's just do the first one again, let's do this one, but let's, you know, move it forward 20 years and do all this stuff to it. I really enjoyed Tron Legacy in that it had good characters, had a good story, the effects were just mind-blowing. Just the whole production value on the movie was amazing, and it really distinctly reminded me of Blade Runner.
Blade Runner is a great movie.
Tron Legacy is my number two.
Really look forward to seeing it. I liked the first one a lot. Bruce Boxleitner, and did he show back up?
Yeah. Bruce Boxleitner, Jeff Bridges are in it.
Yeah.
Cool.
Was David Warner in it? No, he died.
Oh.
Yeah, he died, didn't he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Who was the lady in the original?
I don't remember.
I don't remember her name, but she is not in the movie.
Okay.
Excellent. Rachel, what's your number two?
My number two is Inception.
I did like that. It hasn't shown up already.
It was a good movie. It was visually entertaining. The storyline was awesome. It was fun to try to follow and figure out, even though I never really did.
It's one of those great movies that's good to watch a second time.
We bought it when it came out and enjoyed it just as much, and, you know, probably even more because I, you know, second time in you get to understand things better, and it's been fun to talk about. It's one of those movies that, you know, good to talk about. It's fun. Yeah, it sparks great conversations and stuff.
It does elicit good conversation.
I like the way the little girl really hammered, not Luke Perry, but what's his name?
Leonardo DiCaprio.
The little girl just really, her character really hammered this guy really, really hard about the whole fact that he was putting people in danger. She's like, no, I'm not letting you get away with this. No, I can't. And you can tell me to sit down and leave it alone all you want, but no, you're endangering these people by lying to them about how dangerous your psychology is and all this kind of thing. And I thought she was really sort of the unsung hero of that story. Without her witful, like, meddling with what was going on with the people. She's supposedly the apprentice.
I just really thought that Joseph Gordon-Levitt is really hot. He looked awesome in that movie. So, you know, girl perspective there.
Girl perspective.
No, he.
If for nothing else, he looks nice.
No, excellent movie. I really dig Christopher Nolan. I really do a lot. Number two, Tracy.
My number two is something that I doubt has been mentioned on Red Phone Zone previously and probably will not get it mentioned again after this show. But it was Easy A.
Is what?
Easy A.
I really wanted to see that.
I want to see that. I haven't seen it yet.
It was one of those where we had an afternoon to kill. We went to the Dollar Theater. We checked it out. And we walked out of there going, that was a good damn movie.
Sort of a Legally Blonde phenomenon?
No.
Not even close.
Not even close.
You bite your tongue, sir.
I like that movie.
Well, even still, I mean, I haven't seen it, and I know it's a smarter film than Stone. That.
Stone.
Emma Stone, yeah.
Gwen Stacy.
Sorry, Emma Stone, who...
Gwen Stacy in the new Spider-Man.
I want to see that even more now. But she make a good, damn good Gwen Stacy. But it was a good retelling of the Nathaniel Hawthorne classic Scarlet Letter. It is... And unlike most modern retellings, like 10 Things I Hate About You or... You know,
like 10 Things I Hate About You.
Love that freaking movie. I'm a literature geek, so I have an English degree, so I like that stuff a little bit more. And they reference Scarlet Letter constantly throughout it. In fact, that's why she decides to do what she does and brand herself that way with the Scarlet A. And it's really well done. Emma Stone does a fantastic job. Stanley Tucci, and I don't know who played the wife, the mom. They're fantastic. Like, we wanted them as parents.
I like Stanley Tucci a lot.
I do too, yeah.
It was a really, really good movie. I had a blast seeing it, and the only reason it didn't make my number one is, well, I'll explain when I get to my number one, so...
Excellent. Well, I almost rented that right before I came home, so now I'm wanting to go back out and get it.
I saw that it came out like a week or two ago, and I've been wanting to watch it. I wanted to see it when it was in the theater, but I knew it just wasn't one of those ones I was going to make it to.
You know, I read the description about her getting her reputation ruined and the Easy A thing, and I did not make the Scarlet Letter connection. I'm surprised.
The big Scarlet A she wears didn't give it away?
Nope. Or
loosely based on the Nathaniel Hawthorne story in the trailer.
I must have skipped over that.
You must. Yeah. Cool. Moving on. Shay, what's your number two?
My number two is Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Oh, yeah?
I really, really enjoyed it. I thought it just flowed like magic. Like I was gonna say water, but magic seemed more appropriate because it's the Sorcerer's Apprentice. You know, it flowed like magic. It was just one thing to the next. It had a love story. It was very, very Disney. You know, punch all the numbers, do a very fully rounded story because all just well done. It's like they had the love story, they had the Master Apprentice story, they had the societal accomplishment story, all in one. One package, and you had this guy who, because the master and apprentice is the apprentice has something to teach the master has something to teach the apprentice, and you got the love story where the two people have some sort of.
Did we review this for the show?
I believe so.
Did we, Ethan?
Which one?
Sorcerer's Apprentice.
We did not do because I haven't seen it.
Okay.
It's on my list of stuff to see at some point, but I have not seen that one.
It was all right.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. I mean, it wasn't great. It ended very sloppily.
It ended very sequel.
I might have done my own confessions on it, possibly. It ended really sloppily, but overall I liked it. It was fine.
It ended with like, okay, something's not done here. But what? You know, but what is not done?
That's not what I mean. It was just like an editorial mess at the end. You mean like like stuff that had moved 15 feet from shot to shot, stuff like that.
Oh, like
continuity.
Continuity.
Yeah.
Continuity.
Continuity. So my number two. This is where my list started. This happened to me months ago to where I knew that I was going to be fighting between two movies on my top six, and I was really hoping that a third would come out and would kick them out of the list, or that I wouldn't have this struggle in my mind. I picked Inception for my number two, Christopher Nolan. I really wish that we either could do... I could do the top six film directors of all time again, because I really would like to throw Christopher Nolan in there. He's a dude that just really understands his craft, and I just think that Inception did not miss on a single mark. There was nothing in that movie that was not masterfully crafted. It was a great story. There was not a role in it that if you cast it differently, that the entire movie would not be a fundamentally different movie. Visually, it was arresting. Just everything about it was a beautiful thing, and it saddens me that more directors do not take that visceral approach to movies. And I just thought Inception was a brilliant film, and it's amazing, amazing, amazing movie.
The texture of the carpet was a giveaway at one point in the
movie. Right. I mean every little detail was worked out. I mean, it really reminds me of Kurosawa. I mean, you heard stories of Kurosawa to where if there was a puff of dirt in the film, he put it there. He wanted it there.
Right.
There was nothing that was, what's the word I'm looking for? Incidental. In his movies, everything was planned out, and Christopher Nolan just seems to have such a mastery of his craft that he is the exact same way. So that's why it's easily my number two, and I think it might be the best movie that came out this past year. So, Ethan, number two, number one. I don't really want to hit honorable mentions on this.
I think we've been popping the honorable mentions, actually.
You don't want to hear my honorable mentions.
I really enjoyed The Karate Kid.
Yeah, good movie.
Saw that, enjoyed it.
Robin Hood,
it was okay. I'll give it a...
Faster wasn't bad. Faster was a heck of a lot different a movie than I thought it would be.
I don't know what that is.
I don't either.
It's the Dwayne Johnson.
Oh, right. I didn't care. Yeah, gotcha.
But it was way different a movie than I thought it was going to be.
Good.
And I probably would have to put... as far as movies that Legion would probably be on there, it was just it was
popcorn
a heck of a
movie.
I expected it to be.
And
for all the wrong reasons, it will never ever win an award. But as far as complete inappropriate giggle factor, Machete.
Yeah,
I haven't seen that.
Just for being damn fun, and for being entirely unapologetic for what it was.
Yeah,
would be there.
I like unapologetic movies. Movies that are like, we're doing this. Watch it.
Yeah.
That's entirely what Machete was.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I haven't hit my honorable mentions all the way through the list.
Yeah, I think I've mentioned all the stuff I've written down.
I saw another 2010 release, and that was Gamer. So.
That sucked, so yeah, don't mention that.
Interesting premise. It didn't come off as well as I think they could have. I like the scene at the end where he gets really, really, really drunk in order to throw off the mind control.
Yeah. Sounds like a scene you would like. All right, Ethan, hit your number one.
We've already talked about it a bit. It's Inception. It sort of flip-flopped back and forth with me and Tron Legacy, but I think you hit all the major points for me, and that I think as far as landmark movies of our lifetime, I think Inception is going to be one of those that people go back to and reference and look at and analyze.
People are not going to be talking about The Prince of Persia in 20 years. They're going to be talking about Inception still.
Most likely.
Right. I mean, they're still talking about, you know, Citizen Kane, you know, now. I mean, as far as its impact, they're going to be talking about Inception in another 20 years.
Yeah.
And I think one makes it, sort of pushes it over the top for me as the biggest movie and the best movie of 2010 for me.
Mm-hmm.
Is that it was a well-done movie. It was well-filmed, well-acted, well... It was just great storytelling. It was a smart movie. It didn't assume that you were an idiot for watching it.
Yeah.
It also didn't assume that you knew everything either, which is great.
Yeah, it wasn't necessary for
because
you.
that a lot of movies they will either say you're stupid or you know more than you do.
Yeah.
And it was right there in between.
It's a movie that didn't coddle you to say, "Oh well, you're the lowly moviegoer here. Let's explain everything to you. It's like, no, just go with it.
Yeah.
And I think that made it just a fantastic movie all around. I think Christopher Nolan is entirely justified and should be considered for best director.
He's already been nominated for the Golden Globe, and that's a good fast track.
I think it was what you're saying about the science is like they didn't, for somebody who knows enough science to pay attention, they use the right words. They use certain keywords that you're like, oh, that's what they're doing. And then they didn't bother trying to hammer that concept into the viewer like it was a science lesson.
They didn't waste time in the movie going, this is why this works, because they didn't need to. It's just, it works. Moving on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I like it. It was all around great.
Yeah, really enjoyable, really enjoyable film. Rachel, number two. Or number one.
Number one, yes.
No.
My number one actually surprised me that, you know, it kind of, I just thought of it.
I have a suspicion what it is.
I thought of it, and then it just kind of kept moving up my list the more I thought about it. And I was actually at Walmart earlier and was like, you know, just about bought it. And I have a 5-year-old, so I, you know, was thinking I could buy this for her and she would watch it and then I would get to watch it too. So, you know, so my number one, it has already actually been mentioned, but it's How to Train Your Dragon.
Right.
I don't know. I saw it twice in the theater, so I must have enjoyed it enough to go back and pay that price again. it was fun.
It's one of those movies that works on the different levels, you know?
Yeah.
For kids, but it's also great for adults.
Yeah, and I think part of the reason why I liked it so much was the first time I saw it with Aaron, and he mistakenly thought that the dragon's name was Doofus, and so we've got this inside joke about it, and then he started calling the main character Spork and Doofus.
Spork
and Doofus.
So the dragon's real name was
Toothless.
And the whole way through the movie, I thought they were saying Doofus.
So I mean, there's that aspect to it. But
it was literally the last 15 minutes of the movie that I realized they were saying Toothless.
So yeah, that movie was just very, very entertaining, fun to watch, great little jokes, kind of heartwarming in a couple of spots. And,
I like the spunky little Viking girl with her legs. She was
all the characters were fun. All the dragons were fun.
Really well cast for a...
Yeah, very, very well done.
Really well cast for a animated film.
Yeah, so that's my number one. I really enjoyed it.
Excellent. Tracy, what's your number one?
My number one beat out Easy A for the spot because something similar to what Rachel said. I saw it in the theaters. I walked away just overjoyed that I had seen it. And when I decided to put a movie on like my Christmas gift list, it's the only movie I put on, and it was Scott Pilgrim.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a video game geek. I'm kind of an independent music geek, so. Hey. It would be the ultimate Tracy movie. It had fighting, it had video game references galore, it had the independent music. I mean, when he walks past Knives in the club, and after the ceiling's been broken open, when they fought the Katanagi twins, and the snow's coming down, and the Broken Social Scene song comes on, I went, oh my god, this Broken Social Scene! And that, like, I was sold. That sealed it for me.
That's so awesome.
It was visually very well done. Based off a graphic novel, which gives it even more geek cred, I thoroughly enjoyed it the whole way.
Edgar Wright. Yeah, I love Edgar Wright movies.
I do too.
It is also my number one, and I agree with everything you said. My favorite scene was the... How do you do that with your mouth?
I'm surprised your number one isn't Prince of Persia, just to fuck with Ethan and
just,
I.
That would just be to get kicked off the show again. But the... I put it... It's actually my now, like, my fourth favorite movie ever. I've changed my top six movies of all time for this movie because I thought it was just that great. For everything you said, it's the music coming together with the video game references and the unashamed video game reference. Like, a health bar goes up, a P bar shows up. I mean, just, it's written for somebody who can hum the tune of Mario at the drop of a hat and consider that completely normal thing. You know, I love the scene where he's like, I know how to battle, and blah, giant green, like, what was it, an ogre or gorilla or something shows up to fight the dragon.
It's the dragon.
I've actually only seen the movie once, so I'm just not remembering a lot
of this.
That's
great. Yeah.
I think we're going to buy it eventually, but...
And he goes back and does the level again because he screws up the level, so he gets to go back and do it again. It's like, whoa!
He gets a fucking one-up,
The only knock on it is on the Blu-ray release of it. It's a Universal Blu-ray, and those must take fucking ever to load. Because I don't know if their other Blu-rays do this too, but it just was abysmally slow to try and actually get going. And that's a knock on the company more than anything else.
Right.
That's distribution.
Yeah, my only negative I can say about it is Michael Cera, but...
I think he's my favorite of his movies so far.
I can spin that into a positive because it doesn't turn me away from it. Yeah. And, you know, because, you know, I watched a movie where he was, you know, the primary person in it, and I didn't hate it. So
yeah, and I saw Scott Pilgrim. I enjoyed it, but I guess I just wasn't as enamored with it as everyone else. It was entertaining, but it's not really my type of movie. Even though I can hum I can do the Mario theme off at the drop of a hat type of thing, but I'm just not a video gamer.
It hit me right in the confluence of my geek spot. If they had thrown in tabletop role-playing game references, there's nothing I would have been able to do. I would have been powerless against it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the kind of my point, Ethan, is that you grew up just knowing Mario. Not every single character in that movie was a video game nerd as much as Scott was, per se. But we're all so video gamed, like embedded in our minds, that it was really sort of a movie that would only resonate, and it would have only resonated with our generation and will continue to resonate with people going into the future, because I don't think that video games are going to go anywhere. They're just going to be a secondary part of it. It's like sports or...
Video games aren't going to go anywhere?
No, we'll be teaching our kids other languages on video games in like a century.
That sounds like it's fucking going somewhere to me.
Oh, you mean
okay, gotcha.
Funny.
Gotcha. Okay, so we got two votes for Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah.
My favorite's Toy Story 3. That should not be any fucking surprise to anybody that listens to this show, or especially any of these people that ever talk to me, because I love that movie. I mean, I honestly do think that overall that Inception probably is a superior cinematic work, but it didn't hit me on an emotional level like Toy Story 3 did. I mean, it just nailed me. I mean, and that movie had me before the opening credits, because I thought that the Night and Day cartoon in it was just breathtaking and amazing. And I loved the first two Toy Story movies so much. And you can say what you want about sequels. Sometimes there's been great sequels. Sometimes there's been shitty sequels. You know, Empire Strikes Back, great fucking sequel. Highlander 2, shitty sequel. But name me one third movie in a series that stands up to the original. It doesn't really happen. But Toy Story 3 does. I think Toy Story 3 is superior to the original two. But at the same time, it doesn't... It needs those first two, but at the same time, it's just better because of them. I mean, they're just, you know, extra filling on this wonderful movie and this wonderful franchise that literally puts it up there as one of the greatest film trilogies of all time. It's an emotional movie. It's very well thought out. It's not just, you know, shot down a conveyor belt, put out to make a lot of money, because the original Toy Story, when did that come out? 97? I believe, and here we are 2010 when we get Toy Story 3, so they've obviously had enough time to do to put some thought into it and stuff like that. And what's really cool about it is the only people that didn't return from the original to do the voices is they had a slight case of death, and they were unable to overcome that to make it for the movie.
Unfortunately, the resurrection process did not work.
I love Toy Story 3. I think it's my favorite movie that's come out this year, and I do believe that the Inception probably is a better cinematic hallmark, but I also do think that Toy Story 3 will be gathering dust on kids' movie shelves for years and years to come, because it's just that good of a movie. So it's my number one. Unashamedly, no apologies, I love it.
The scene at the end where he's giving the toys to the other kid was really touching.
Mm-hmm. The trash compactor scene. Oh, God, great scene. And, you know, God damn it, Ethan, I just don't think you should watch this movie, because you've been listening to me going on about it for like 7 months, and there's no way it can live up to what I've been saying to you. So I loved it. I just flat out loved that movie. It just, I loved it. And not only have I talked too long about it now, I've talked about it on many shows, including its own
special.
Its own special that I put on the website. So yeah, Toy Story 3 easily my number one.
That's so, the end of the segment.
That is the end of the segment. Anybody have anything to add at all?
Scott Pilgrim versus
Yay,
the World.
Yay, Prince of Persia.
Yay, yeah, Prince, Prince of Persia.
All in all, maybe it wasn't as bad of a year for movies as we thought it was.
Yeah, it was.
I had a great time going to movies this year.
I had fun going. You know, like a lot of times the trailers were the best parts, though, and that's a bad sign.
I want to see the Owls.
I liked
the
getting to see a lot of shit for free.
Yeah. I saw the Owl movie. It wasn't that bad.
The Guardians of Gahool. That was
out of the 25 movies I saw this year, 5 of them were either disappointments or outright pissed me off because they were so bad.
Yeah. I don't know if number one that pissed you off the most was Prince of Persia, but yeah, that movie made me angry how bad it was.
I enjoy it. I don't know what to say.
No, I don't know what to say either. So yeah, that's been our top 6 favorite films of 2010. Tune in next year where we'll be doing our top 6 favorite films of 2011, I'm sure. But before that, we got to do our last segment on the show. We're going to be doing a Red Phone Zone retrospective, where we are talking about just kind of all the notes and stuff that we had over the past year of doing the Red Phone Zone. So stay tuned. This time we're going to be taking a little different approach to it because I know the guy that hosts the show, and so I can make whatever segments I would like to see happen. And so what we decided to do instead of the tried and true segments is we're going to just make something up and see how it goes. So this time around, we decided that we just wanted to do a Red Phone Zone 2010 retrospective and what has happened with the Red Phone Zone in the year of 2010. In a word, everything. And I say that because the Red Phone Zone, you know, kind of had its genesis at the end of 2009 in that I discovered the Bagden Boardcast at that time. And I said, well, shit, I could do this. And then I believe it was even then that I got into contact with Shay and I started talking about the possibility of doing a podcast with him. And then I got back to Lawrence and the rest would be kind of like a historic thing.
That rest is history, as they say. Yeah. It was January, wasn't it? Our first one, January.
I thought it was February.
Was it February?
One was in February.
It's been a month running around.
Our zero issue was in February. That's when we did the beer review, the top 6 Batman films, and
characterization of what was it? Green Lantern or Kryptonians?
Neither.
Neither.
We didn't do a characterization on the first segment on issue 0.
That's right. We discussed who we were that was and basic, why we were important.
Right. Issue 0 was just kind of a figuring out our equipment one. Yeah. And then we had the ill-fated issue number 1, which we did on at Super Nerd Night. And we lost all of
everything.
Pretty much.
The whole show.
Not the whole show. We had like 10 minutes or something like that. But yeah, we lost it, and that's too bad because
it was pretty neat.
Yeah, it was a pretty good show, but we did it the very next night, and we captured more than most of that when we just did our own thing, which was Batman and Son Casting Couch. That's when we did the Green Lantern characterization. Yeah. And then we did our Confessions of a Movie Snob before it was named such on Avatar.
What were we calling it then? Just
movie review.
Movie review.
Yeah, it was just a movie review. And then when we did that, we threw it up on Facebook, and I believe that's where Ethan found it, if I remember correctly. And then he listened to it, and he's all like, "Hey, I need to fix this. Why don't you let me be on your show?
Come here. I'll fix it. Stop doing that."
Yeah, more or less.
But I hijacked the show, you know, about that. Mm-hmm.
Thankfully,
dude, you're letting me on the show now. Dude, you're letting me on the show now.
Mm-hmm. Well, a team of horses would need to be there, or something like that. How's that saying go?
Team of Wild Horses.
That's...
Team of Wild Horses. Yeah. So, yeah, we actually had Ethan on the show for issue number 2. That's when we did Casting Couch Final Fantasy VII, a characterization of Sherlock Holmes. And that's when we did our Watchmen review.
First time I cast myself in one of the movies.
First time you cast yourself in a fucking movie.
But not the last.
Not the last. Fuck, it wasn't even the last time you did it on that episode. That is, the Watchmen review still stands up as one of my favorite reviews we've ever done, where I actually think that we really got our point across, and it went pretty well, and that's when Ethan was a special guest host. By the time issue 3 rolled around, when we did...
Issue 3 was a mess.
Issue 3 was a mess. That's when Ethan was... You know, an official part of the show. That was our 4-hour episode that we lost an hour and a half of. And that was the first time Rachel listened, if I remember correctly. She listened to us doing it on the Ustream.
Right.
Yeah.
And which is a reason why there's several of these shows to where, like, the last sections are lost to the ages. Ustream. And then we switched over to Wirecast, and everything's been... relatively groovy since then.
We luckily saved the audio on several of those occasions where we were recording the audio separately from the video. Like, we're doing that today, and we've kept doing that because
we actually have good audio.
Yes.
Let's see. We can flash forward. Issues 3 and 4 is when we had Jeff on and he did the Vidiot Pit.
Yeah, that was fun. I like that.
Yeah, I like doing the Vidiot Pit.
We don't talk as much about video games without our meat popsicle.
I don't really play video games as much as I would like to. But yeah, we did have that. Then I think we can pretty much jump forward to issue number 6. That was our first ever special. That's when we did our Harry Potter special.
Our Harry Potter special, which has been one of our favorites.
It still stands as probably my second favorite show we've ever done.
It's the one I regret not saying the most.
What? Well, we have it.
I know, but I wanted to see it live.
Yeah.
Live studio audience.
Go ahead, Ethan.
Is that the first episode we did down in the basement?
It is. It is the first episode that we did down in the basement. And then directly after that was our next special episode where we did the James Bond issue.
All James Bond, yeah.
That one took a long time as well. I think that one was pushing 3 hours.
That's probably one of the worst cases of me just getting all of the segments completely wrong. Like,
yeah.
I did the wrong villains. I chose minions instead of villains. It was bad. I didn't quite catch everything that was going on. And Ethan and Aaron were both in some sort of thinking in the same vein the whole way through.
Well, we say James Bond villains, and that's what we
think.
We don't think of the minions as villains.
Odd job.
Yeah.
Jaws.
And then on issue 8 is a fun one. It might be Ethan's favorite. I know at one point he said it was. That was our Batman Beyond issue.
Mm-hmm.
And we also did a Vidiot Pit of the new Super Mario Brothers Wii on that one. That was a really fun, really good issue.
Or as I like to call it, Super Mario Brothers Clusterfuck.
Super Mario Brothers Clusterfuck.
You completely defeated me in Casting Couch with your...
Yeah.
With Clint fucking Eastwood in that one.
And what was so funny?
Wow.
Yeah, that was what was so funny about your defeat in that, is because you could hear it in your voice. Because you had cast Michael Ironside, and you were trying to sell us on it, but I'd already gone, and you were just like, yeah, he was in...
My choice sucked. I changed my mind.
Yeah, and then I remember, and Jeff was still on at that point, and I remember he was still fighting for Charles Napier as Bruce Wayne, and both Ethan and Shay were all like, no.
Clint fucking Eastwood.
No, Clint fucking Eastwood. Well, that was before
he was inducted.
Which, our first inductee, actually our first... two inductees were on issue number 10. That is when Christopher fucking Lee initially got his rights, although as far as we are concerned, he'd had it for 10 years previous, and we gave it to Bruce fucking Campbell at that point.
That's right.
Yeah, so that part was an awful lot of fun.
That was cool.
Then let's jump into the issues 12 and 13 clusterfucks. Why don't you two talk about those?
That was great.
I had fun doing my issue. I think when we figured out it was issue number 12.
Yeah, yours was 12.
Yes, and I had fun doing it, you know, but it was pretty much, you know, the what you'd expect from a show I was doing.
Yeah.
So. But then we did issue 13.
What happened on issue 13, Shay?
Shay.
I don't know how we didn't see this coming. Lucky number 13.
Lucky number 13.
And let's give the reins to Shay. That's a really good idea.
I made a casting couch that was impossible, a top six list that was absurd. The top six Natalie Portman things I checked, by the way, the guy Benjamin Millipede
is a
dance choreographer on the movie she's in most recently Black Swan.
Black Swan.
And what was the movie review of
your fucking script?
Oh, my script. That's right. which is excellent, obviously.
That's why it got a C and a D.
You said there were too many characters. I remember correctly. It was the big thing that you guys agreed on was that there was so many characters involved in it that it was hard to tell where the story was.
Yeah, it got kind of ludicrous.
I blocked it out of my mind.
Yeah, I've recently re-listened to it.
What was on issue 14?
Issue 14. That was that's when we did a characterization of Mjolnir. Mm. We did a Doc Savage Confessions of a Movie Snob, and that's when we did our top six comic book heroes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, when was it? Give me a second. Yeah, issue 11 is still my all-time favorite that we've ever done.
That was the one where we were planning for Shay not to be there because you had to work.
Right.
And you showed up. You came out of nowhere and showed up.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
The top six DVD commentaries, and that one was a lot of fun to do.
Yeah, it really was. That's when we did the casting couch of Doctor Strange, and I think we agreed on four out of the six or something like that. It was insane. And then we did a Confessions of a Movie Snob on Doctor Who season two. Which was so much fun because I fucking love Doctor Who.
Because before then you really had no idea what Doctor Who was, and you really fell in love with it.
Well, I mean, it wasn't right then, but you know, it was over the course of the beginning of the show up until then that I started watching Doctor Who. And then after that, we can pretty much skip everything up until issue number 20. Which was our next order of Ruthaz, and that is when we inducted Clint fucking Eastwood. That was Ethan's nominee, and as soon as he named him, I'm like, oh shit, I've lost, and I don't care.
Eastwood.
I think that's when I threw Morgan Freeman into the ring, and that's when Shay picked Betty White.
Betty White,
yeah. And then, let's see, issue 21, 20, see, issue, then we had issue 21 and 22, which brought us about the end of season one. At which we made the biggest mistake in Red Phone Zone history in taking 2 months off in between seasons.
Yeah, we took 2 weeks off between these seasons.
Months.
No, this time, between season two and season three, we did 2 weeks.
What season are we on?
Three?
Jesus Christ.
Good God, we're on two.
We're on two, dude.
I thought we took the 2 weeks off.
We're on issue 37. So that would be 44, would be season three.
Right, man.
Yeah.
And we're going to take 2 weeks off between
We're going to take 2 weeks off between two and three.
This
because,
is just a Christmas break. Gotcha.
As far as I'm concerned, none of season two has stood up to most of the better episodes on season one. However, I will give season two this. Now that I've re-listened to all of it, season two sounds so much better than season one. The audio quality, we can thank that to Mr. Chad.
Yes, I mean, the addition of
Mr. Chad. Chad came on 24, if I remember correctly. I think we are still kind of doing things via our regular computers.
Ustream. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then we brought in Chad. So then we can jump up to, at that point, we can jump up to issue 30, really. At which point, that's when we inducted Stan... The man fucking Lee.
The fucking man Lee. We decided that to Stan the fucking man,
into
not the
order
man
of
fucking.
Ruthaz. After that, I guess we can...
I think that's also when we really ironed out the Zone of Ruthaz induction.
Yeah.
The rules and everything. I think I like where that's
I like where that's heading. I do too. You know, like the first time it wasn't even Democratic. We said this is how it is. Right. Fucking deal with it. And then when we did it on issue 30, that's when we actually got Democratic. We put a poll on the website and we actually had people voting, and that was kind of cool.
Down to the wire votes.
No, down to the wire votes was with Stan the Man Lee.
Yeah. That was really cool that we actually got votes during the show, live broadcast of the show. We got votes for the poll. It was cool.
Yeah, if I remember right, one was for Kurt Russell, and the other was for Stan the
fucking Man Lee.
Kurt Russell's nominated on this one.
Oh, that's it was Michael Keaton. Excuse me, Michael Keaton. Yeah. I remembered it was one of John's.
Yeah, and speaking of the poll on the website, is you can go vote now for the whoever's going to get inducted in issue 40.
Yeah, three issues away. Yeah, so the nominees are Jackie Chan, Liam Neeson, Meryl Streep, and Kurt Russell. So,
that's a hard fight right there.
I still stand firm that I don't care who wins on that one because all of them are awesome.
That's the way that Orr the Ruthless tends to go.
I didn't want Betty White to win.
Why not?
Because she's not as cool as Christopher fucking Lee.
Well, he was already in. He was already.
He should be the barometer in which all other facilitators, the Indomitable Order of the Zone of Ruthless, should be judged. And I didn't really want Michael Keaton to win too much. As much as I like him, I don't think he's quite there. But I mean,
he's got a little bit more work to pull.
He's got
off.
And I love Michael Keaton. I think he's an incredibly underrated actor. But at the same time, I don't think he's quite in the same league as Stan the Man Lee or anyone like that.
Stan is quite the phenomenon. Just more.
He
so
turned
than an
90
actor.
The other day. His 90th birthday was the other day. I forgot about that. I meant to mention that on Geekly Happening. So, you guys have anything to add?
No, I think I like where how the show has evolved over the last 37 issues. I like how we're becoming a bit more organized about everything.
Yeah,
we're familiar with everything, the different segments and how they get presented.
You know, I'm excited to see what happens with next season and you know where we take the show in issues to come.
Yeah. I do too. I got some good ideas for season 3, and I'm looking forward to it. I really am. Love me some seeds. I really hope it turns out as good as I hope. I'm already working on stuff to make it even better.
We're talking about doing a new set, aren't we? Isn't that something that's...
Well, we're going to move back downstairs.
So we'll have...
If you want to call that a new set. It's a new old set.
Kind of like a new set.
Yeah, kind of like a new
it's
set.
It's like buying a new used car.
Sure it is.
I think we're just getting more and more... adept at doing the segments, and think that is part of, I think, where Aaron said he doesn't think any of the season 2 really stands up to the season 1 as much.
And I agree.
I
stand firm on that, actually.
In season 1, we were really just sort of super excited.
Do we really want to get into this on the air? Because I can nail what it is.
Oh, what's that?
Preparedness. None of us are as prepared on season 2 as we were on the first season. Ever. I mean, we talked about fucking Peter Graves dying for 15 minutes. And we, like, skim over Irvin Kershner in 3. That's fucked
true.
Up.
That's true.
That's fucked up.
Well, being prepared for the show is definitely probably a good idea. And I think that we were sort of getting into the swing of it. You know, we were it's every week. We're doing it. And it was less of a novelty. So it was taking up a little bit less of that, like... and I think now that we've sort of gotten it into an ease state, I think that the season 3 we can, you know, it's more comfortable and we're going to be able to be better prepared for everything all around.
Mm-hmm. Hope so. I think that, I don't know how far it is down the line, but I know that Ethan and I have at least casually been trying to figure out the way to do the show in HD. We haven't really thrown any money towards it, nor either of us even close to being fucking prepared for it, but we've kind of looked in that direction, and it's doable. Did they just freeze on us? Oh, it's just the screen, isn't it?
No, they're still right there. Yeah, the Skyping, we've Skyped now twice in season 2.
Three times? Uh-huh.
Oh yeah, Ruthos, and then
we did 2 with John, and now this.
And it's interesting compared to actually just having everybody sit around the table.
Well, I mean, it took us 12 issues to kind of get like this part of the show down, and then it took us once really to get Skype figured out.
Yeah,
because the first show that we did with Skype sounds like shit, and then past that, it sounded pretty good.
And I appreciate you guys letting me on for this issue. I've enjoyed what I've heard of Red Phone Zone, and I was glad to be able to offer, you know, what I was able to this time around. So thank you for that.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Glad to have you.
Yeah. The more the merrier, we always say.
We're gonna, one of these days, we're going to have like a 12-person casting couch, and it's going to take like 6 hours.
That would suck. That would really suck. So do we actually want to do an outro section, or are we just going to leave it from here?
It feels very much like an outro section, to be perfectly honest.
I do have something else that I want to talk about, though.
Oh, yeah.
And it's, you know, re-listening to the show, we go back in the day of issue number 4. Ethan did a rant against 3D as a commonplace thing in the marketplace. And that was an awful lot of fun.
And home 3D systems as well.
Yeah, and, you know, be that as it may, you know, I kind of liked the way that worked because it is a, I don't know, a tenant of Red Phone Zone where we don't really want to focus on negativity so much, which is why we don't do Star Wars shows. But it's something that I just really feel the need to talk about, and that is going to be the Christopher Nolan haters on the internet.
Yeah.
And I know that you can go ahead and you can stick on the internet onto anything, and that almost, you know, cuts it out entirely. But there is this contention, this group of people on the internet that just, and I also need
that you want to pour some water on because they're all flaming each other.
Well, I mean, yeah, they're flaming, and they're the epitome of what you would look at for a internet troll. And there are people out there that say that if you like Inception, if you like The Dark Knight or anything like that, that you are sucking Christopher Nolan's dick.
Interesting.
And I just, I don't see that correlation. I mean, the way that I see it is I'm reacting to quality.
Yeah.
And I honestly and truly believe that Christopher Nolan is one of the most unique directors working today. I honestly think that he understands. I said a lot of this on my number two, on my top six of the year. But I just think that he truly understands the film medium, and he takes it to a level that I cannot think of anybody aside from Hitchcock or Kurosawa that take that stance on film. And it's A, frustrating the more directors are like that, and B, that it happens with everything fucking popular out there. That if something's popular, there's going to be the people, oh, well, yeah, fuck that, and you're an idiot for liking it. And that just irritates the shit out of me with somebody like Christopher Nolan that is just head and shoulders above anybody else working out there. I mean, I really think that, you know, I named Quentin Tarantino is my favorite working director. And I think that Tarantino and Nolan are very similar and that they understand what they are doing. They understand this is a film medium. They're not just using it as a medium to tell a story, which is, no, don't get me wrong, it's very important.
There's lots of ways of telling a story.
But 99% of film directors stop there. And it's the Christopher Nolans and the Quentin Tarantinos and the Spielbergs and like those people that really, really, really get it that take it to that next level.
Interesting. They remember their format, their presentation, and their audience all at the same time.
Exactly. It's, I think that, you know, Inception is a brilliant film. Very well made. Very well put together. Very well thought out. But I still stand firm that I don't think that the most brilliant thing Christopher Nolan has ever done has been that. I think it's a great movie, and I think that, you know, it all came together. I think the smartest move that he's ever made in a movie was the casting of Liam Neeson as Ra's al Ghul in Batman Begins. And
awesome.
I'm not saying because I love Liam Neeson or anything like that, which I do.
Yeah.
What he did was that everybody, if you haven't seen the movie, I'm sorry. It came out 5 years ago. I'm going to be spoiling shit.
Yeah.
The way that the movie was presented, Liam Neeson played Henri Ducard at the beginning of the film. Ken Watanabe was presented as Ra's al Ghul. And then a bunch of shit happened. Ra's al Ghul, you know, quote-unquote died, and Henri Ducard got saved in the whole, in the struggle of everything. And then the movie moves on, and Bruce Wayne becomes Batman, and you throw in some scarecrow action and shit like that. And then in the last act of the movie, Liam Neeson shows back up, but instead of it being Ken Watanabe, it's Liam Neeson. And that is a shocking revelation, to say the least. It's even more shocking in the it's an even more shocking revelation in the age of the internet that that did not slip past it. And the reason that I think that it was so shocking is because Nolan cast him against type. Because Liam Neeson is he plays the Henri Ducard type characters, where he is the mentor, the the badass that falls at the beginning of the movie, so that somebody can step in and take his place. And by casting him as a villain, nobody ever saw that coming. And I just think that is genius, and I think that is indicative of what I mean by him truly understanding the medium, because he is actually going on the audience perception of what's going on.
He's not saying, well, I don't care if they already know who Liam Neeson is and what kind of parts he uses. He's like, no, that's part of how
he is 100% saying that I expect and anticipate them, so I'm going to use that against them and to make this an even bigger punch in the face.
It's going to kick it harder.
And honestly, I just think that Christopher Nolan is a great director, and he is so unique, and it pisses me off that people just want to be different so bad that they're going to bash on somebody just for reacting to quality.
He's successful. Get him.
Damn it, I almost want to do the top six directors over again because he would be on there. Probably number two. I love Christopher Nolan now.
That's actually something that we're reviewing the series, and we've talked about it before, but I think that having... Not all of them. But
some
I think
top sixes could be done again.
Like, my top six movies has now changed.
Mine hasn't.
I mean, but mine has, and your top six directors has changed. Mm-hmm. Top six movies, top six directors, top six... There's a couple of big categories that could be repeated. Like, finding that list is something. And also one of those things of doing the... You know, just giving us a chance to say... over again what we liked about it and be with now that we can compare it to Toy Story 3 as well as another movie is something I think that it would be interesting to do going forward. I don't think we really need to do it in season 3. I think we have enough top sixes and enough we make
yeah,
it
I've
so
already,
we,
I've already got season 3 populated with segments.
So We Make It Superman movie might be something that you could do over again,
maybe
something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, after the new one comes out.
Yeah.
What's Ohio's thoughts on Christopher Nolan?
I've never been disappointed by anything I've seen him do.
The only thing I was disappointed in was Insomnia.
And that wasn't that bad.
No, and that wasn't that bad. It was still directed well. The first movie I ever saw that he did was Memento, and that was...
That's another one that just shows that he understands his genre so well.
Yeah, he understands the medium that he's using, and I think he will be one of those directors... I mean, we already talked about Inception, and it's one of those directors down the line that people will cite and say, well, there was this film director at this time who was very visionary in what he did and used the medium very well, and that was Christopher Nolan.
Yeah. And I just hope he doesn't turn into like a William Friedkin or somebody who just, who gets too big for his britches and, just kind of shits on convention and, loses any respect in the medium.
I'm going to do this because it is not done.
You know what? The funny thing about it is I actually see some of those things and things that he says on interviews. He is very anti-3D, very anti-3D. And I know that we've said before that we are anti-3D on the show,
but we are
anti-3D in that every fucking movie that comes out, like Yogi Bear did not need to be in fucking 3D.
Should be done well.
Maybe Prince of Persia or something like that.
They should
not even Prince of Persia.
In some things.
Tron Legacy needed to be in 3D.
What?
Tron Legacy.
Yeah,
in 3D.
Tron Legacy seems like it needed to be in 3D, but not every movie.
It needs to have a gimmick, and he agrees with us on this.
Yeah.
Right. But the way that I see it is, it's good to not jump on digital technology automatically to fix every single problem. I agree with that. I mean, I use the analogy often about Steven Spielberg with Jaws, and that, he had problems with the mechanical shark, so he had to shoot around it, and accidentally making a much scarier movie because of that. And, So he used the tools that he had available to him to make that movie. But I think the opposite could be true too, that you should never shoot down a tool that could be making that could be used to make a story better. Like it sounds like it was done in Tron Legacy or even Avatar, I guess. But you know, I just think that I think that's a dangerous way to be, to say I will never use this. I think you should say this isn't gonna be my crutch, but I'm not gonna discount it.
Then again, you have also have that scenario of somebody who works in a certain type of medium, somebody who prefers maybe period pieces or black and white stuff. Well, there's room now in the industry for the 3D guy, the guy who really wants everything to be out in your lap, who has to be told to put the stuff
which
back
is cool if
on
it's done
the
right.
screen, you know, as opposed to.
But you know, I'm fine with him not being interested in it. I'm not fine with dismissing it as a whole,
right.
And that's kind of what I'm saying.
It's another paintbrush in the
and it palette. Also annoys the shit out of me. Just people that are take a stance against something popular just to be different. That's just fucking irritating, aggravating as all hell.
Like it reminds me of this. There was one of those really kind of elitist kids. I mean, I was friends with everybody in high school, but there was this guy who was sort of an art elitist. He was in like poetry club and this kind of thing, and he didn't like Calvin and Hobbes. He was like, he said this line to me. He said, "I used to like Calvin and Hobbes, but then it became popular," and I was like, "Dude, popularity really shouldn't have any. You know, you should like something on its own merit, whether or not it's popular or not." And that seems like what's happening here.
Yeah,
people who are disliking it because it's more popular than their small.
I do find it funny that you go to like any comic book movie, you know, fan site or, you know, the message forums, and you have 150,000 people on there saying how much The Dark Knight sucked and why it sucked and, you know, but it still made $1 billion.
Yeah.
I find that kind of shit hysterical. You know, I've seen this movie 15 times and I know that it sucks because I've seen every single angle so many different times. Like, well, you still added a lot of padding to it.
you watched it a lot and seemed to really be engrossed by it. I know you don't like scene 32 and the 5 seconds of scene 6, but...
Or the Batman voice.
I didn't say it sucked. I just said I don't like the way he does the voice.
I'm not necessarily pointing at you, and I also want to point that out, is I have lashed out at you in the past about, you know, your retarded antics against Inception. I'm more lashing out at those people, and for that I apologize.
That's fine.
You are my analog for that.
I will be the punching bag for your...
You are my punching bag for that. But, you know, it just fucking frustrates me when people say, oh, it's not a complicated plot at all, it's simple. It's fucking stupid, an idiot can follow it. And that's just simply not true.
I think probably a better way of saying it is that for somebody who's really into who considers themselves intelligent and can follow a lot of details all at once, it was well done where you could actually go oh, then somebody could say that was really confusing. You're like, yeah, it was really kind of confusing, wasn't it? But what happened was,
yeah.
And that's a really fun phenomenon to take away from a movie, is the one who walks out and goes, okay, that scene and that one scene, that's what happened, and I caught that, and I figured you probably missed that. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of an element, or the fanboy references in Iron Man 2 were like, that. When you said to me, that was the little dud missile.
That was fucking funny. I don't care what you say.
No, it's a perfect example. I did not catch the reference. I didn't understand why that was supposed to be funny. I was like, eh?
Yeah.
Why would you put a rocket on a combat
suit?
Because
Justin Hammer sucks.
It was Justin Hammer, and I didn't catch that part, because I'm not as much of an Iron Man fan as I could be.
But I guess that's my two cents. I feel like I was very unarticulate in that, but it just annoys me.
I followed you.
It just very much annoys me that people choose to take a stance against something popular just for the sake of popularity, or, you know, just to be different.
Yeah.
And on top of that, it makes me feel stupid for liking the movie and thinking it's very intelligent and very well made.
No.
You know, that's fucked up.
People who say they hate a movie just because it made a lot of money. Like, I did not like Toy Story 3 all that much, even though it's the number one grossing movie this year. It has nothing to do with how much money it made. It has to do with the fact
Is it? Yeah, I guess it is. You know, yeah. Inception's number two.
I just have a Harry Potter's time number two. Getting past that frame of, like, these are toys, and they're like...
And that's like... That is a...
It's odd to me.
That's a base stance.
It's something I'm not going to be able to work around.
Sure.
It's just me.
Mm-hmm. So, Ohio said their bit.
Yep.
Okay, anything else?
Nope.
Should old acquaintance be forgot?
Yeah. Yeah, something about some good friends.
Next one will be after the New Year, so...
Yeah, yep. Well, you are welcome back anytime, so long as we got the Skype running. It sounds like fun.
Hey, hey, hey.
Hey, hey, hey. So I guess with that, I'm Aaron.
I'm Jake.
I'm Ethan.
And I'm Tracy.
Let your geek flag fly.
Yeah.